The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
You want the good news, you want the bad news?
I don't like either one of those options.
Your words are super wise, man.
You are a prophet. You deserve a prophet.
You do whatever you want. Who am I to tell you what to do?
But you're a psychologist.
Well, I know less than you do.
You're making me a better parent and a better wife, and thank God you're on the radio.
What planet are you on? I don't buy any of that stuff.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
What are you talking about?
You make my afternoon really fun. Enjoy ya.
You're about the most exciting thing I have right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Thank you for joining me on The Doctor Is In. This is the Monday version of The Doctor Is In, e-person Monday. Do not say email. It's patriarchal. Gender insensitive. I know it's spelled differently. It's spelled M-A-I-L as opposed to M-A-L-E, but it's a homonym. They sound the same. There was a guy years ago, he was a mayor of a big city, and he got in major trouble for using a word that you're not supposed to use at all, but the word was not the word that people thought it was, but it sounded kind of like the word. It didn't even sound the exact same as the word, but he used it. And he got in big trouble. That's somewhat of what's happening. Okay. We will get to your e-persons shortly as they come in rather in tsunami-like fashion. And they are screened for various reasons. And as I've said before, when I pick out an e-person, some of them I print out, some of them I leave on the phone, I read them and think, okay, that is something that deals with a question that might be helpful to some folks that listen, depending on how long they listen. However, the neat thing for me is that I don't remember exactly how the email unfolds. So sometimes as I'm moving through it, I'll make an observation or perhaps a quasi-prediction about where this is going, and then I'll find out later in the email if I was correct or incorrect. That's kind of fun. Sort of a chance to take a look at what you might call some clinical skills in reading an email. And that relates to the Manilog today. You've heard of women's intuition. You don't really hear of men's intuition as often. Men have intuition too. But the ladies have a more honed sense of social intuition. They see things, they sense things, they pick up subtle cues that we guys often miss. I'll read you this. Article starts out like this. In a large, crowded hospital in Zimbabwe, a 30-year-old woman was lying on a gurney about to be wheeled into the operating room for a minor procedure when Rebecca Bingham, MD, happened to walk by. She'd never seen the patient before, and she knew nothing of her medical history, but she had a sudden sense of alarm. "I felt I should check her heart," said Dr. Bingham. She put her stethoscope to the woman's chest and heard a murmur. It's an abnormal blood flow through her heart, a possible sign of mitral stenosis, in other words, a narrowing of the mitral valve, a heart condition that can cause serious complications if the person is anesthetized, goes under anesthesia, general anesthesia. Bingham alerted the surgeons, who canceled the operation to further evaluate the patient. Tests confirmed that, in fact, she did have mitral valve stenosis. An amazed surgeon asked Dr. Bingham why she had suspected this disorder. She was a family practitioner now, not a surgeon, not even a cardiologist. She said, "It was just a hunch." That makes it sound like it's a guess, right? She just was walking by this woman. She saw her on the gurney getting ready for a minor procedure. And, oh, just I don't know. I just kind of guessed maybe she could have a heart condition. Intuition is more than that. And I think it was probably at play with this general practitioner. There might have been something about the way the woman looked, something about her breathing, something about her color, just some subtle things that didn't even register into the consciousness of the doctor, but she picked up on it. There's a lot of research coming out that says what we call intuition is our brain making sense and interpreting and going through in incredibly rapid fashion a whole bunch of input, sensory input, and then reacting on it. There are those folks who say, you know, something just seems wrong with this situation. I'm not going to go to my car that direction. Now, what did they see? And what they've done is they've interviewed these people later, asked very specific questions, trying to get them to recall what it was about the situation that set off alarm bells. What made it? And what they find is oftentimes what they said made them uneasy, they could pinpoint. But at the time it was happening, they didn't. This is like the firefighter who is in a building and you hear him say, get out, get out, get out, get out, get out. And he's telling his guys, get out. And within a matter of seconds after that, the roof collapses on him. Now, he may not have looked up at that roof and saw that the fire was eating away at the structure, but he just sensed something. Maybe he heard a very subtle creak, something that didn't register consciously at the time, but he knew, get out, just get out. And then later on, as he analyzed the context, he said, you know, I heard a sound, and perhaps that sound is a sound he heard 27 times before, and it always indicated that something was weakening. This happens to me in therapy. I will be talking to someone, maybe 2-3 sessions, and I'm struggling to put together a consistent picture of what's going on. I'm thinking to myself, what am I missing? What is missing here? I'm sensing that this is just not the whole story. Now, there's nothing to indicate to me this is not the whole story. Somebody's not deliberately lying so badly that I picked up on it. It wasn't. And then long about the third session, they might say, well, there's one other thing I wanted to tell you. And they say it. And it confirms my sense that this picture needed more to it to be able to be solved. Now, is that because I'm such a brilliant clinician? No, it's because I've been doing it for 40 years. And you start to listen in a bit of a different way. And you hear stuff that's said that connects to something that was said 9 minutes ago that just doesn't click. Something's not right there. But I can't identify what it is because I just don't know. But there's a sense that I have that this picture is not complete. There's got to be something else going on that explains this. A lot of times that happens when somebody will describe an emotional reaction that is way out of proportion to the circumstances. And I'm thinking, what is it? What is it? What is it that they would react this way? What is it? There's something. And they deny it. They deny it and deny it and deny it. And I'm thinking, well, okay, is this just a hyper reaction? And then later on it comes out that they had some interpretation to what this person said that fueled them, that inflamed them. Some time back, I had a situation where it was a very, very religious person. Very religious person. Extremely religious. Person that pretty much was a daily mass goer all their lives. All their lives. And it wasn't just a devotionally religious person. It, from every, all indications, this was a religious person, that Jesus was the center of her life. But yet, since the onset of COVID, she essentially not only stopped going to church, but hadn't been back to church yet. Now, why would this be? You know, my intuition is telling me something is missing in the explanation here. That you have this deeply religious person who has given up the stuff that was all a part of her life. Now, if you say, well, okay, then she was convinced by the media and everybody else that COVID means death, and that's it. Possible. But I just sensed, and I could not explore this too much further because I didn't go much past the first session, but something was in there, and I sensed it. I didn't know what it was, but my spidey senses were up that I'm missing something. Never did find out what it was. But it was, I call it a clinical intuition. It's a skill, and you got to trust it. You got to trust it. A lot of times, your gut's telling you something, your instincts are telling you something. My parents will say this. You know, my son wanted to go with so and so, and there's something about that kid that just bothers me, and I just did not want him with that kid at that activity. And then later she finds out that kid got arrested for drug possession, or that kid got in trouble with the law, or that kid did something incredibly foolish. And at the time, she had only met that kid one time. He had come to the house, and she had a 22-minute contact with him. And he didn't necessarily say anything that would indicate that he was a companion to keep her son away from, but there was something that mom said about him that I just have a bad sense about him. I can't place it. Now, some might say, well, that's judging, Dr. Ray. She wasn't judging him. She was just coming to a conclusion about what his potential conduct might be. And that she didn't want her son around that. And sure enough, as it panned out, this person she had this gut instinct to keep her son away from, she was smart. Okay, I will be back and immediately dive into the first e-person. I'm Dr. Ray.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you have an insurance plan that pays for everything, even things you don't believe in? There are options. You can join Solidarity HealthShare, a faith-based health-sharing community. Plus, Solidarity HealthShare can save you money with prices starting as low as $384 a month for families.
Call to see how much you can save. 844-398-9399. That's 844-398-9399.
Have you heard the latest and greatest travel news? One more reason to join us on our premier Tease Italy pilgrimage, La Dolce Fede, or The Sweetness of Faith, this November 6th to the 14th. Hi, it's Teresa Tomio, and yes, it's an unbelievable price, some $3,600 for a 7-night land package, including Assisi, Orvieto, Rome, and much more. But now, and here's the latest and greatest news, no reason to worry about having to test to come back home. All testing requirements dropped. No vaccination, no testing, an incredible opportunity to visit tombs of the great saints such as Francis, Claire, Blessed Carlos Acutis, and so much more, except those tests. So call Corporate Travel now, 800-727-1999, or visit us online, AveMariaRadio.net, on our travel page. Call now, the trip is filling up, 1-800-727-1999. Hope to see you in Bella Italia in November.
This program brought to you in part by the nonprofit Angelicum Academy.
This is Father Joseph Essio. I have an important message for all you homeschooling families. You can get an outstanding and fully accredited Catholic college education and save $100,000. To learn how, go to angelicum.net. That's angelicum.net. Earn 75 college credits and an associate's degree in high school for just $3,500 a year. and earn your BA degree just 1 year later at age 19. Check this out at angelicum.net.
Dr. Ray Guarini, thank you for joining me. Let me go back here. I got to find this one. It's back in June. Hold on. Going back. There it is. All right. Dr. Ray, I have three adopted children, all brought home from the hospital. I don't know what she's trying to tell me in saying that. My guess would be she's saying there was no early life history that we had to contend with. They weren't in an institution in Eastern Europe for 4 years. They weren't from Guatemala, and we got them when they were seven. They weren't taken from birth mom at age two because of neglect and drug exposure and unstable environments. And we got them from birth. Now, the implication there is, therefore, we should not have any of those kinds of developmental matters. Well, I'm hesitant to say this because I don't want to discourage anybody from adopting. All these kids need stable homes. But to the degree there were two factors involved. One, if there were drug and alcohol use early in the pregnancy, which you can't know unless birth mom admits to it. Or, genetically, you can't know necessarily the birth mom's genetic background or the birth father's. So in fact, you could, of your three children, get one with a more high-risk type temperament. Sounds like that's what happened. They all know, okay, right now the ages are son, 33, daughter 31, son 26. So these are all young adults. They've all known their adoption stories, but have chosen not to reunite with their birth mothers. And that is typically the way it is. If you look at the popular media or you look at made-for-TV movies, it would make it look like that there is a gaping hole that has to be filled. And as a matter of fact, as the movement toward repealing Roe v. Wade was becoming more possible, I started seeing articles on adoption that is traumatic for the adopted child. In other words, there was something innate to adoption that automatically put this kid at emotional, social risk. And I thought, that's no coincidence. No coincidence, because one of the options for an abortion is a loving adoption. But if adoption is psychologically bad for a child, then you're not going to want him to go through that, right? You're not want him to end his life in the womb. So they have not chosen to reunite with their birth mothers. And I've said this before on this program. I have 10 children, all adopted, and seven have not connected with birth parents. Three did, two of which they no longer have contact at all. It was not a good thing. And then one has, and there's still some connection with the birth parents, one out of 10. And that's pretty close to the percentage, by the way. Now, this is, I think, the crux of the email. Do you know, or do you have an opinion on wound, trauma, attachment issues? And I think this is the kicker line. I just read a book called Primal Wound. Now, I have no idea what that book's about. And any speculation I would make would be based upon the title, Primal Wound. The very beginning of life. Something sets the stage that this kid is going to have a very, very traumatic issue to overcome as he gets older. Primal wound. Something about birth, something about the adoption, way, 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 way back. Do I have an opinion on wound, trauma, attachment issues? Yes, I do have a very strong opinion. And my opinion is not based upon just my opinion, because otherwise it's just one other guy saying this is what he thinks, as opposed to other people who think differently. I think I've got a lot of research to back me up. Adoption attachment issues have been promulgated. They've high profile. I've seen a lot of parents come into my office where their adopted child has been diagnosed with attachment issues. Well, first of all, that's kind of a generic term, because reactive attachment disorder is not even a clinical disorder according to the DSM-5, which is a diagnostic and statistical formal manual. Attachment issues. A lot of times, the parents observe that this child doesn't seem to have the emotional connection to them that they would like, or that perhaps their biological children do. So they immediately place that upon something about the adoption. Now, I agree. It is something probably about the adoption, but not in the way they think. As I think happened with this young lady, here's what the mom says. My daughter especially seems to have all the signs of the primal wound. Okay, so obviously the book said, if you get this primal wound, whatever that is, you're going to have trouble with life. And mom says she's struggling in life. She's divorced. She's depressed. She has no friends. She struggles with relationships, even with us and her siblings, has a master's degree, but is unemployed and is in major debt. So this is not a woman who's leading her life well. And that was because of the primal wound. No, I don't think it was that straightforward, even if there were a primal wound. In all likelihood, it is much more related to this person's overall neurological wiring. Some people just have temperaments, the way they're wired. And if there was drug and alcohol exposure in the room, that raises the risk of wiring that makes it as though this person doesn't navigate this modern culture well. This is not a farm in 1880, as I've often said. This is a culture that is tricky. It's seductive. It does all kinds of things to pull people away from the way they were raised if they were raised in a stable home. So as a result, we look for an explanation. She's adopted. Okay, so she has some kind of trauma from the adoption. That would explain it. But you know, the problem with that is, even if that's so, how do you go back and undo that trauma? Well, Dr. A, you talk about it, you address it, and you work through it. Yeah, but this young adult here has problems in manifold areas. She's got all kinds of problems, not the least of which is this one. She blames us, especially me, for a lot of her problems. See, there you go. She's turning on mom. I'm this way, mom, because of you. And I've seen that. I've seen that a lot. I've talked about it a lot on this show. There's a direct, straight-line relationship. The more I struggle in life, the more likely I am to blame you, parent, for it. My suspicion is, now mom says she has trouble with her siblings, which means probably the siblings are doing okay. So my suspicion is, two of these three adopted children at birth went on to do pretty well. They were raised in a stable, loving home, and they went on to have stable, responsible lives. The one did not. Much more likely explainable by the way she's wired. She's wired different. She looks at things different. She's more emotional, or she's more impulsive. It's kind of the way she is. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean she can't change it. But for me to look at the primal wound as the main cause, I think that's a major stretch, even if it exists. Thank you.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Mother Angelica said that the essence of evangelization is to tell everyone that Jesus loves you. Matt Frad says that it is one beggar showing another beggar where to find bread. Are we so full of the things of the world that we can't hear or receive the gifts that God is giving to us? In Isaiah, we hear, "The Lord delights in you. I've called you by name. You are mine. You are precious in my eyes, and I love you." Well, we often don't want to hear that, and in the Gospel of Matthew, it hits us over the head even more that we're invited to be part of the kingdom of God. Jesus is king, and he's come to establish his kingdom. The Beatitudes are the eight roads to God. They lead us with his gifts of the Holy Spirit to become the new person in Christ who will find happiness and bring that happiness to others. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
It was like these aha moments kept happening for me over and over and over again. And they still happen because every time you turn around, you see something in society, if you have eyes to see and ears to hear and are looking at it through the lenses of Scripture and teachings of the faith, as we say always here, it makes sense. You connect the dots and you look at what's happening with all of this idea of the transgender ideology and this saying, I want to do whatever I want with my body because it's my body. And then you see all the problems that come from that, not even looking at it from a quote-unquote religious perspective, but the physical problems and mental problems, of course, that the media tried to suppress, but now it's starting to come out. It's like, well, that's because you're denying who you are, made in the image and likeness of God. It's not that complicated, but we make it complicated because we don't want to look at the truth.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Trying to show a little class in my bumper music. Dr. Ray Grandy, thank you for joining me. Doctor is in. Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, my website, drray.com, drray.com. All 16 books are there and available. And we have our premium offer, which is if you buy 3, you get 1 free. If you buy 4, you get 2 free. Yeah, I know. That's our premium offer. Yeah, if you buy 5, well, I'll tell you what. If you buy 5, Andrew, you have absolutely no gaps whatsoever in your psychological well-being. But you have to carefully select those books. Okay, this is E-Person Monday. Go to my phone here, which has just locked me out. My daughter, 28, raised in the church, is dating a man, 32, who is once baptized and saved. Okay, so my guess is he's either an evangelical Christian, once saved, always saved, confess Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, and you will then be saved. You are guaranteed salvation. Now, I don't know. Again, I can't extrapolate his view of the Catholic Church, obviously. There's nothing here that would indicate that. However, there is a higher chance that if he belongs to a non-denominational or Baptist or fundamentalist that says, once saved, always saved, that he would not view the church favorably. Because the church, of course, doesn't teach that. And Christianity has never taught that. That's relatively new. So he says, after dating for 2 years, okay, the daughter's dated this guy for 2 years, I'm wondering if I should send him a letter expressing our love of him and how important church is in our lives. Well, here's my question. What kind of contact have you had with him over 2 years? Because if you had any kind of reasonably consistent contact, he knows how important the church is in your lives. In the words of one non-Catholic who came to a Catholic's home, you're gonna put all your shrines away here, okay? So he probably knows the church is very, very important to you. He probably knows at some level that your daughter was raised that way, and perhaps it's still important to her, although that remains to be seen. Should I send him a letter expressing our love? Well, if you've shown him love in the last 2 years, I don't think you need to redo that. I think what it sounds like you're saying here, Dad, is maybe one last time I should emphasize to this guy that our view of the Catholic Church is extremely central to our existence, and we love him, but he needs to know that and respect it. Here's the problem. It's not your view. It's your daughter's view. She's 28. And in your email, I don't know. There's nothing there to indicate how she does view all this, whether she's still in the church, whether she's not in the church, whether she's told this guy, I'm Catholic and I'll always be Catholic, so I think you need to take a look at the Catholic Church, although she's going to move in with him. So that would tell me that at least at that moral dimension, she has chosen to ignore the church's teaching. So one might say that she isn't as directly connected to the Catholic Church as her mom and dad. My daughter will be visiting him. Okay, it sounds like this is an out-of-state kind of thing, and so it kind of indicates that maybe the connections weren't all that many. He asked her to move in. But she will be asking him about their future together. So will she be saying, if I'll move in with you as long as we have a good possibility for marriage, or will she be saying, I'm not moving in with you until we're married? I don't know. All that is unknown. And that says why I can't give Dad the answer he wants. He says, not sure if a letter from me would be appropriate. Now, much of the time, I get too many emails to answer. But I usually make a comment or two. And I said, Dad, I think you would be stepping on delicate turf. And he wrote me back. That was my thought the more I considered it. Thank you. An almost daily listener. Well, if he was a daily listener, then there'd be no doubt about what he would do that would work out best, right? This is one of the old, okay, I've got to make sure that I've dotted all my I's and crossed all my T's, and I'm going to let him know that we don't approve of them living together. I'm going to let him know that we're Catholic and it very much is the center of our world. I got to believe he already knows that. And I got to believe your daughter already knows that. So it's not a matter of, oh, gee, Dad, I didn't know how important the Catholic Church is to you. It's a matter of, oh, gee, Dad, I just really don't agree with some of the morals of the Catholic Church. Obviously, you don't have a moral obligation to write that letter. Clearly, if he knows anything about you, if he knows anything about your daughter, he knows how she was raised, which by implication is how you think. So at this point, if you do that, he's 32, she's 28. They can basically say, well, yeah, that's what your dad thinks, but. And that's one of the problems you run into when you have these young adult kids who are living morally unlike you tried to raise them. You want to let them know how serious you are about following the church's morality, but their attitude is, I don't follow the church's morality. Now, one might say, well, come on, you got to at least try. You can't just let them go do what they want. And my answer to that is, you've already tried. You've tried many, many times. Now, this is not to say you never approach the subject if it comes up. It's not to say that you don't have discussions with your son or daughter who's living this way. You can ask them, why are you doing this? What does this mean in terms of your view of the church? Does this mean you don't believe what the church teaches anymore? You know, if you say something like, well, you know, you're turning your back on how you were raised. Well, but she'll look at you and say, how you were raised is meaningless. I'm 28 years old. I can do what I want. I'm an adult. If you're going to raise the question, you say, does this mean that you really have decided that the Catholic Church is teaching on this morality, living together physically before marriage, can be ignored? Is that what you're saying? And what does that say about your overall view of being Catholic? Now, Jim, I think you could do that. I think you could bring that up with her. But I think in terms of writing a letter and saying, hey, you know, you really got to know, we love you both, but we're very Catholic and we really don't approve of what you're doing, my guess would be they know that. Wouldn't be a shocker, would it? Maybe it would. Maybe if you say to me, no, I've never really told them that. They don't know we're Catholic. They don't know how we think. Okay. But that's 99% of the time not the case. Especially with your daughter, who was raised by you. All righty. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In on ePerson Monday.
Believers who respond to God's word and become members of Christ's body are intimately united to him, the Catholic Catechism tells us. In that body, those who believe are united with Christ through the sacraments in a very real and hidden way. The body's unity does not do away with the diversity of its members who engage in a diversity of functions. The unity of the mystical body triumphs over all human divisions. As St. Paul says, there are no Jews, no Greeks, no slave, no free man. All are one in the body of Christ. Christ is the head of the body of the church, the principle of creation and redemption. We are united with Christ in his Passover. All his members must strive to resemble him until Christ is formed in them. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Award-winning EWTN TV and radio host Michael O'Neill has written a new book based on his popular series, They Might Be Saints. This latest EWTN publishing release introduces you to some of this country's greatest blesseds and venerables, from an explorer priest to the U.S. Bishop of all media, and a former slave turned successful businessman, this book is filled with the unique stories and achievements of exceptionally inspired men and women. Discover how some of the holiest Americans in history can transform your faith life. They Might Be Saints, the latest release from EWTN Publishing, now available at EWTNRC.com or call 1-800-854-6316. That's EWTNRC.com or call 1-800-854-6316.
Thank you for joining me, Dr. Ray Guarini. Just a couple more church bulletins. This is what can happen when you don't proofread. Ladies Bible study will be held Thursday at 10 a.m. All ladies are invited to lunch in the fellowship hall after the BS is done. Got to watch your initials there. But this could be, I'll read this one and then I will share with you my absolute favorite. The eighth graders will be presenting Shakespeare's Hamlet in the church basement Friday at 7 p.m. The congregation is invited to attend this tragedy. And my favorite, as a shrink, low self-esteem support group will meet Thursday at 7 p.m. Please use the back door. Don't let anybody see you coming in. Hi, Dr. Ray. Just wanted to say, you touched my heart saying, don't let the older people in your life be invisible. Seek them out. Give them a call. They're so much more important than our society gives them credit for. She's alluding to a monologue I did a few weeks back where I talked about in most of human history, very much all of human history, and even today in many cultures, older people were viewed with tremendous respect because they'd lived life. They were sources of knowledge. They were sources of history. You know, you couldn't get into the internet and find out something. You talked to grandpa. You talked to your great uncle. Older people were respected. That's why in a lot of the tribes, the village medicine man was an old guy. Why? Because he was grizzled. He'd been around the block a few times. No blocks in the village, but around the tree a few times, or however you want to put it. So for much of human history, the old people have been respected. That's not the way it is now. Now young, youthful, get out of the way. You're old. Your ideas are old. We've got better ideas. We're smarter than you. And that's kind of the way it's viewed. So I talked about that. And she said, it is so true. I no longer have my parents, but I wish I did spend more time with them. It's sad the attitude young people have toward the older generation. You are right. You are so right, my dear. All righty. Dr. Ray, this is another hi, Dr. Ray. What advice do you have for a four-year-old who doesn't like to entertain herself and relies on everyone else to provide entertainment for her? Well, I would have no advice for that four-year-old. I would have a lot of advice for her parents. I'm not going to say to the four-year-old, hey, come on, you got to learn to entertain yourself here. And the four-year-old's going to go, well, thank you, Dr. Ray. Very appropriate. Thank you. She rarely gets lost in doing things and playing by herself, meaning she doesn't immerse herself. She prefers adult interaction at all times of the day and needs ideas of games to play and only wants things to do that include me or another adult. Now, when a parent says something like that, here's the question. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? Sorry to use that old cliche. But what it means is, has this child been in effect trained that mom is always going to be available to do something with her? So over the last year or so, as she got past the twos, get a little older, a little more able to amuse herself with things, that she came to expect that mom would do this because mom has done this. My experience is, the vast majority of the time, when you have a child age 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 9 or 10 who doesn't want to amuse themselves, it's because we've taught them that if they nag enough, they badger us enough, they whine enough, if they sit in the middle of the floor doing nothing for an hour and a half, that we will come to their rescue. That's typically what happens. She has a younger sister and prefers to ask me what to do all day over playing with her sister. Now, Ma, if she's asking you constantly, at some point, doesn't that get to the point of rudeness? Nagging? My wife used to do that when we had the 10 kids under 12. You know, they all tried to nag. And her standard line was, are you nagging? And that question meant, stop nagging or you're going to the corner. So I would suggest you say to her, you're nagging me, honey. Please don't ask me again today about that, or I'm going to stand you in a corner, or I'm going to sit you on the steps, or I'm going to put you at the dining room table with your head down, or I'm going to send you to go lay on your bed. I'm going to do something. So what is happening, it sounds like, is that this little four-year-old is nagging mom, nagging mom, nagging mom, and mom's answering her. Go play with your sister. No, I don't have time to do anything right now. Can't you see? I have to do the dishes. Why don't you go get that puzzle? And all that mom is trying, the little girl is saying, no, I don't want to do that. I want you to do something with me. Now, probably, here's what's happened. Here's my guess on the dynamics. Mom has agreed enough, she's acquiesced enough, that she's paid off. She's a slot machine. If the little four-year-old nags enough, badgers mom enough, looks unhappy enough, distresses herself enough, mom is going to, at least a percentage of the time, try to entertain her. Thinking, okay, I'll entertain her, for 8 minutes. She'll be cool. This is nice. And then I can go about my business. But what happens is, no, it's a slot machine. You paid off every so often. And that teaches people to play longer and harder, which is probably what the four-year-old is doing. If we're at the park or the pool, she says, what should I do? Or let's do a game. I see other kids doing whatever they please and finding things to entertain themselves. Well, your daughter doesn't. Now, whether she's naturally that way, I don't think so. Or we've kind of unconsciously trained her to be that way, which is much more likely. That's happening. So what are we going to do about it? I ask you this question, Dr. Ray, partially because I think she needs to be able to be okay on her own, and partially because it's driving me a little nutso. Well, I'd think so. Simple answer, Mom. One, you decide when you're going to do something with her. Obviously, there's times you're going to do something with her. You're not going to totally ignore your little four-year-old. But if you think it's excessive, then you have every right as a parent to say, I will do this amount of time, this amount of frequency. The rest of the time, when she asks you, you say, honey, not now, I can't. If you ask again, you're going to go to the corner. There you go. Now, you call me. I'm going to let you know when this airs. You call me, and I bet you'll tell me, Dr. Ray, it's a miracle. It's a miracle. She's entertaining herself. I know. Because if you don't entertain her, she is going to find things to do. She's not going to sit in the middle of the carpet and do nothing. Not at age four. I'm Dr. Ray.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling. 40 years of experience. 17,000 current students. Pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plan, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Pretty much everything. My wife and I use Seton. Some of our children. Tell you this. Two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT. Over 30% higher on English and reading on the ACT. It's a rigorous program. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to setonhome.org. That is setonhome.org.
He is only one of four popes honored as the great.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Leo I was pope at a time when Roman civilization was being overrun by barbarian armies. He stood as a light in the darkness and even saved the city of Rome from destruction by Attila and the Huns. Leo died in 461.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Alrighty, I'm going to try to squeeze in another e-person here. Where are we at? Let's see. It's how Dr. Ray, I appreciate your show. I've been married to a good husband for 18 years. We have two daughters, 16 and 14. But I've been struggling in my marriage. Now, this is something I do not hear but once every 25 times. when people want some kind of marriage counseling. She says, I'm realizing that I am a difficult person. God bless her. People who come into marriage counseling, it's the other person that's difficult, or at least more so difficult. But for somebody to say, I'm realizing, but I just want to say the bad news here, dear wife, is that you've been married for 18 years and you just caught on. Took you a while. I'm moody. And I've been having a hard time shrugging things off that annoy me about my husband. He's a hard worker who enjoys spending his free time from his special job on chores, which leads him to impatience and exhaustion. Well, here's the thing. If you realize that you're difficult and moody, you got to pinpoint how you're difficult and moody. What are you doing? What is it that you're saying? What is it that you getting frustrated about over small things, irritable? When you say difficult and moody, that's a very broad description. It's an umbrella trait. You got to pin it down. You got to say to yourself, here is where I'm most likely to be difficult and moody. Here is how I am most likely to be difficult and moody. And then, what are you going to do about it? Dr. A, I want to know how. It's not a matter of how. It's a matter of will, resolve, determination. I don't want to be difficult. I'm going to shut my mouth when the urge is to say things that are nasty. I'm not going to argue like I would normally argue over some small thing. I'm going to ignore more. I'm not going to make this a big issue out of a comment. I'm not going to do that. I've been doing that. 18 years I've been doing this. This is not good. It's impacted our marriage in a whole lot of other ways. So, if that happens, it's a matter of taking the second step. The first step is the hardest one. You already made it. I'm difficult and moody. That's a wonderful first step. It truly is. Now you have to say, let's operationally define that. That's what the shrinks say. It's an operational definition. In other words, you can't just simply say, how do I be less difficult and moody? Now, No. That will get you nowhere. What are you doing that your husband would say is difficult and moody? Now, if you say, well, he's that way too. Well, here's the question. How much of him being that way is a response to you? And how much of it is something that he's doing that you're going to have to find ways around or not let get to you as much? Well, he needs to stop that. Well, yeah, there's no argument there, but the problem is you can't control what another person does. You can only control your reaction to that other person. If he says some snide remark and you think to yourself, boy, that stinks. Now, you can turn it into an argument, or you can do your very best to get past it. Or you can say, why exactly do you think that? Tell me what it is that makes you say that. Now, you may think it's nonsense, whatever you hear, but you're still just trying to figure out where are you coming from with that? So, as you said later in your e-person, it's affected a lot of parts of your marriage. And I don't know if those aspects of your marriage will improve. However, yeah, it's really hard to feel a certain amount of warmth towards each other when you acknowledge our relationship is not so sweet. We've tried date nights and nights away alone, but we're always too tired and the desire is not there. I'm trying to make peace with this, but I'm really struggling and getting ever more resentful. Date nights don't generally work when you're having a friction-filled relationship during the day. You know, when you treat each other nicer during the day, and sometimes it only takes one person to start the ball rolling. The date nights will work because you'll enjoy each other's company, but the date nights are much less likely to have a positive impact when you're friction-filled throughout the day. I'm trying to focus on all the good things we have in our marriage. True. But you can make them better. Because you said, I can be moody and difficult, and I don't want to be that way. Good. Good. Then you know my advice to you? I know that you're not going to like this. This is very psychologically sophisticated. Don't be that way. How do I be less moody? Be less moody. Identify it. I'm Dr. Ray. Thanks so much for joining me here on The Doctor Is In on E-Person Monday. God walk with you always. And you reach up and grab his hand. He's always got his hand out. You know that. It's your hand, the one that gets yanked away.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit drray.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.